All right. We are back. Third episode of 2026. Joined once again by two incredible commentators. They'll be broadcasting this week's, I believe, Saturday night against men's basketball, Saturday night against U of T. Frankie and Tanner. What up, guys? How are you guys doing?
Pretty good. Pretty good.
It's nice to be back.
Yeah. Familiar faces and familiar places, really. Or for the viewers at home, familiar voices. So before the start of maybe yesterday, I was telling you guys, it might be a chill episode. We're going to do Laurier Sports, Super Bowl, Olympics, NHL. But then yesterday happened. 12 p.m. Everything came undone. Yeah. And it felt like every league had some major signing or major news. Gavin McKenna had some major news.
Oh,
and
boy.
It went from a week that felt like anticipation for what was coming next to everything's happening in the now. But, you know, as always, we're going to start off with some Laurier Sports, you know, being gold and bold. We got to talk about gold.
That's right.
And bold. So what do we want to start? I think we got to start women's hockey.
I think so, too.
Major upset this week. Waterloo walks basically across the street. And it's probably the first time all season when you look at the Golden Hawks, they just got beat. The women's team just got plain beat in a crucial game where they looked bad. And Frankie, you were there during another close game during school day.
That's right.
So, like, what are we seeing from this team that seems so dominant through the first maybe 3 or 4 months of the season, and all of a sudden during the most crucial time of the year, they're not looking great?
I feel like that was honestly just a one-off game because the Laurier women's team, it's been called the team of destiny by that's the talks I've been hearing around campus, is that this team is the team of destiny because you've got such strong scoring on all four lines. You've got a defense that hasn't let much through other than in that Waterloo game. And you have two of the greatest goaltenders in OUA history with Sarah Howell and Kayla Renaud, who I believe have not let in double-digit goals all season. I don't know if anyone wants to fact-check me on that, but I know going into the school day game, Sarah Howell had only let in 6 goals all year.
She got chased for, I think, 4 against Waterloo, and it was not her prime. I think she got 1 against U of T, 4 against Waterloo. Just probably her worst stretch of games, if you really think. Like, 1 goal, that's like the most Sarah Howell game. But then it was like 4 goals against Waterloo, and 2 of them were a lot. I think all 4 of them she kind of wants back, if you look at it. But it was a lot of goals that she'd never really allowed during earlier parts of the season. And she just got totally beat by Waterloo. Waterloo looked like a faster team. Like, I was with Mateo Beckles at Beckles Sports for him. We got shamelessly plugged at Beckles Sports. But he was there, and we were just talking about it. And it looked like the entire team just got walked.
Yeah,
like, consistently.
I think it's a one-off. It's just a bad day. Everybody's allowed a bad day. Everybody's allowed one bad game. This team is still in a playoff spot. They're still first in the OUA West. They're still a good look. Number 3 in the country. They're still a good look for the playoffs. I don't think that this Waterloo game is anything to... I won't say completely ignore it, but I won't say the train's fully off the tracks just yet. It's just a little bit of a blockage.
Yeah, but it kind of makes it tight. Now that Laurier, they look into some difficult games. I believe they play U of T one more time this season, and then they close the season out against Guelph. And Guelph's only 1 point back of them right now. So this could set up, you know, perfect for the OUA's ratings to set up a win in your first place scenario against Guelph. And that loss against Waterloo might play to their detriment come later in the season, because that one seed is extremely crucial, especially for the Golden Hawks' chances of winning that Macaw Cup.
That's true. That's true.
Now, kind of to pivot away from women's hockey, because we love those teams so much. Kind of like talk about men's hockey, who might be in a different scenario to women's. They just came off a brutal loss, 4-1 to Windsor. They now come home, and they play a lot of home games coming down this stretch. They play, I believe it's U of T Friday night, Waterloo, Battle of Waterloo, final one of the season, Saturday night. How crucial is this two-game stretch for the Laurier Golden Hawks men's team, which is really vying for a playoff spot right now?
I think that these are all must-win games. You got to win all these games. You got to put yourself in the best position in the best possible position for the playoffs. But if you're looking at the Golden Hawks, player that really sticks out to me is, and it's been this way all year, is Lucas Chard. He's just been on it all day. We saw in the game against Western where he had 2 goals in that 4-3 overtime thriller. He had 2 goals and he was just able to kind of put the team on his back. And I feel like the thing for the Laurier Golden Hawks is they just got to shoot the puck. We got to shoot the puck, and they got to look like they want it. Because sometimes it's just sloppy play after sloppy play, turnover after turnover. You got to, like, get your head in the game a little bit, pick up your socks, and pound it through if you want to get these must-win points that you need in order to fight for a playoff spot.
Yeah, that's kind of like a perfect representation of what the men's team needs, because they're a team that's in a dogfight right now. The OUA, especially the OUA West for men's hockey, madly competitive. There's not many elite teams in that division. There's not many bad teams in that division. And it just seems like it's going to really come down to the final stretch of games where one team might have 2, 3, 4 games over 500. They might be a good team, a few games over 500, and they still might be on the outside looking in. And that's kind of a scary thought for a team that started 6-0, like the men's team. I believe it was 9-3 at one point, and they could be on the outside looking in come season's finale.
That's right.
So kind of another thing, stick to men's sports, basketball. Tanner, you were really kind of involved more with the basketball side. Actually, you and Frankie. Frankie's going to be calling his first basketball game this Saturday. Guys stepping up clutch for the program. But you guys were kind of surprised when I said to you before we came on live that men's basketball is in a playoff spot. They're on the inside looking it out, and by a wide margin on the inside. They're the 12 seed, 9-10 team. What do we expect from this team? It's a team that not many would think it should be in a playoff spot right now.
They've had a lot of good moments throughout this season where they've been incredibly competitive and been able to keep up with a lot of the best teams in the OUA. It's just they have some sloppy moments, especially in the fourth and third quarter, where the game just gets away from them. But I think those moments where they've shown that they can keep up with those teams is why they're in this race still. There's still a few more games left on the season. Hopefully they can come out with some key wins there just to ensure that they stay in the playoffs. But I could definitely see them not making a deep run into the playoffs, but picking up a couple wins as we head into the playoffs.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking with this team. They play, it is three teams they play is going to be Brock, York, and it's going to be U of T. They just played McMaster yesterday, cleaned house with a bad McMaster team. That's a must win. And that puts them in a really good spot heading into, I think, a three-game stretch where they should go 2-1 minimum. Brock's a good team, but they're a beatable team for their record. And you get into a U of T team, that's a team you're most equally matched with. That's a 9-9 U of T team. And if you want to really advance past that 12 seed, I think that's a team you got to be. And then York, to close the season, that should be the most winnable game left. 4-win York team. Shouldn't really stand much in your way. But if they, last thing you kind of want to do is play a close competitive game against them. But I think, as you said, Tanner, they are on the out. They probably will make a playoff spot unless something horrible happens. Like, worst case scenario.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
Like, they have to basically lose out. Waterloo has to win out, and I don't think that's going to happen. But for them, I think they can be a Cinderella team. They have all the makings to be a Cinderella team. It just, they have to stay consistent, as you said. They cannot play elite in one quarter and then not play basketball the second quarter. Like, they have to, because they have the shooters for it. They might not have the size for playoff basketball, but if they can get hot at the right time, I think they can Cinderella run it.
Yeah. No, they have elite shooters. They have some guys who are great at rebounding. Aiden Whalen's one of them. They have really good leaders on that team, like Ethan Passley, who I think can really rally around those rookies on the team, that, like Julian Binzonghi, try and keep them in the game and make sure that they're on top of their game throughout all four quarters. That's how they're going to win these games. They need to play consistent basketball throughout the entire game. They can't take a moment off the gas.
Yeah, foot on the pedal, exactly, because we've seen them time and time. They should be, I feel like they're kind of a better team than the record shows, because they have upset potential. I feel like they've beaten Western twice, even though they definitely blew the first game against Western, or one of the earlier games, 20-point lead. That's going to hurt for a while. But if they can upset a team nationally ranked like Western, I feel like the floor is open for them to do better things come playoff time. And now to kind of pivot away from a lot of hopeful teams to a team that's not so hopeful for the rest of the season. They're out. Women's basketball, just, they haven't won in forever. It's just, where do you go from a season like this?
You just start looking for next season. You need to try and look at the bright moments. Kira Aikman's had some nice moments throughout the season, only being a second year. We still have some time with her. there's been some nice moments from a couple of the different players on the Golden Hawks this year. But I think right now coaching's just looking forward to the girls that we're bringing in next year, trying to like continue to build chemistry around this team and then progress hopefully to a better record next year. Can't get too much worse.
Yeah, you one would hope. Like I kind of how I see the season for them, the season's over. Especially like when you look at women's basketball, how the playoff format is going to be, there's going to be some not so great teams. I won't really say bad. They're a playoff team. But like you're going to see some teams with well under 500 in the playoffs. And for them to still miss it is kind of disappointing. But if they win the last maybe one or two games of the season, and on a positive note, take it to next season and then build, because it seems to be more, women's basketball seems to be wide open to get into the dance. Once you're in the dance, you never know if that could happen.
You know, I think we have a lot of potential to build upon for next season. But this season, Steph, we just try and win out if we can. Not too hopeful, but try and win out, get a positive mindset going in to next year, and try and come back stronger.
Yep, that's the whole point, really. That's, I think, really the only place you can look for women's basketball.
That's right.
Now, kind of pivot away, I think kind of starts with some burning the news that Frankie has been really wanting to talk about. Big Gavin McKenna.
Oh, yeah.
Swing, and it was just out of left field. We thought, like, where did that come from?
I'm going to be honest with you. I was in my dorm room. I was playing MLB The Show, and I look at my phone, and I get a notification. I open it up. It's Instagram, and it says, Gavin McKenna has been charged with felony aggravated assault. I'm like, what? And you have a guy who, he's putting up 130, 140 points in WHL, goes over to Penn State, absolutely insane recruiting job, by the way. Whoever does that deserves a statue in their name, because whatever. But he had a great game against Michigan State in Beaver Stadium or whatever it's called the other day. And then you look and now he's potentially going to jail for 20 years. And you're like, what the hell happened? So turns out that they were in a bar and somebody had insulted his mom, I believe it was.
Yeah.
It was his mom that they insulted, and he knocked the guy in the jaw, broke it in three places, and is facing some pretty hefty consequences.
Yeah, that just comes out of left field, because you look at the headlines, it's a lot of big boy legal terms.
Yeah.
Felony,
yeah.
Aggravated assault, whoa. Like, but will a guy like that really... Like, he might be one of the biggest athletes in Pennsylvania right now.
With the history of hockey players and legal consequences, I don't know how much jail time he would be facing in reality.
Hockey Canada does have a reputation for these legal incidents.
Yeah,
yeah, but then again, he's not with Hockey Canada, is he right now?
But think about Patrick Kane. In the 2010s.
That's right.
Is he the next Patrick Kane? Is that what we're saying?
Well, let's not go there. But I do think it'll be a very interesting trial to watch. I'm curious to what his defense will be. Because there's no Good Samaritan law in the States. You can't argue that it was in defense of that person because they don't have that there.
Yeah.
So I'm very curious to see what the McKenna lawyers come up with.
He's going to have good lawyers.
He better have good lawyers.
I think it'll be a couple $100,000 being sent out to the victim and just being like, we'll push this aside.
I think so.
Yeah, but I'm just waiting for that 240p bar fight video.
Bar fight video with the CCTV footage.
I can't wait to see Gavin just clock this dude.
I hope he's jawing three places. That's like not easy to do.
Did you see like on his recent post, his teammates deleted, I think it was Luke Misa, Steelers legend, and they just had like Conor McGregor gifs in the
comments.
It was
No.
Like that's when you think, oh man, like is he in the right now?
You're looking at it, oh, what are we doing here? Like,
no, those boys.
I should have thought that one through a little bit more before hitting post.
Yeah, those boys are not PR trained. But to kind of pivot away from Team Canada's negatives to the Olympics, those are tomorrow. Team Canada's, they're going to be there. The best of the best NHL competition, Olympic hockey. Hey.
Who's better?
Bedard. I think Bedard should be on that team.
But over who?
Tom Wilson.
Do you think for Olympic hockey, especially against this American team who's going to be playing a very tough, gritty style of hockey, do you think Connor Bedard is the right choice?
You put him on a line with big dudes. I don't know. What do you want me to say?
No, I just want your opinion.
You think 37-year-old Drew Doughty is going to be able to keep up with the average age of the U.S. team being like 27?
No. 100%. Drew Doughty is a ridiculous pick. The fact that he's on that team, I don't understand. But I see the direction that they were going with this Canadian team, especially with how they have performed in the World Juniors, where it's a lot of just skill guys. And now they're looking for a team that's a lot bigger, a lot stronger, a lot meaner, who's going to try and put guys into the boards. And I think hopefully it goes well, but it's definitely a lot different of a direction than what we've seen with the Canadian World Juniors teams recently.
I think so too. But the thing is, right, you mentioned getting bigger, getting heavier, but you're also getting slower. That's your problem. And you've got teams like Finland and Sweden and even Czechia who are fast. They move the puck like it's... You can't even see it when you're watching TV because they're quick with it. And you got to be able to have, yes, the physical part of the game, but you got to be able to have that hockey sense to realize, okay, when's the right time to make a hit? And when am I not going to make a hit? But when I try, I just look like an idiot and I'm falling through and I'm in the blue line when my team's on defense.
I feel like a lot that has to do with like the ice size we're talking about now. Like that, everyone's seen the Milan renderings. Like it's small. Right. It's small. And we have these big boys like Tom Wilson.
They're gonna be taking up a lot of ice.
Sam Bennett's on the roster now after Anthony Cittorelli goes down with an injury. You have a lot of big boys. Like McKinnon is a power skater, but he's a big boy.
Yeah.
Crosby can play well.
McKinnon can throw his body around. We all knew he was gonna be on the team, but that is a phenomenal pick.
Yeah, there was no question.
There was no doubt about that at all.
Sidney Crosby, McDavid, and McKinnon everybody knew.
Yeah, but what do you think that first line's going to be?
Just total overload. Like, I could see Celebrini catching first line minutes.
I think so too.
He's going to play alongside Crosby.
He's going to play, it's going to be Crosby middle, Celebrini on the left, and then I'm thinking McKinnon on the right.
Because
they just feed him the puck.
I think it's the second line. I think I'll put McDavid on the first line.
Like, McDavid's a center. McDavid doesn't play the wing. He's never played the wing. He hasn't played the wing since he was in the Marlboros when he was 13 years old.
Are you putting McDavid on your second line center?
Yeah.
Whoa.
I think so.
I'm
not messing with his ability to read the ice and read the game that only a center can do. I'm not messing with that.
No, no, no. I 100% agree. I'm just saying I think Crosby is going to be put as a second line center before McDavid's put as a second line center.
That's like putting that's the modern day Wayne Gretzky for McDavid, talent wise, best player in the world. You can't put that on the second line.
Yeah, but can you doubt Captain Canada and his experience?
Captain Canada's 38 years old.
he's playing like he's 22 right now.
So is Brad Marchand.
Okay, we don't talk about Brad Marchand.
Not a Brad Marchand fan?
Not at all. I mean, okay, he's the type of guy that you hate him when he's not on your team, but when he's on your team, he's the best player in the world.
100%. No, I just feel like, especially the point that Crosby's at in his career now, McDavid's going to do better with better minutes. The longer we can have him out on the ice, the better it's going to be for Team Canada. But Crosby on the second line, going up against other second liners for other countries, who's going to compete against him?
That's right. Maybe the United. I think it's United. It's like whether building it up, it's going to be Canada, U.S. in the final. Gold medal game, then whoever else wants to take the bronze medal. It'd be kind of disappointing if we do see, Canada.
The Swedes are going to have a good team, man.
That's a rough team. It's just no Russia.
Yeah.
I don't think the Russian team would be that good.
Honestly?
Are we sure about that?
I don't think that before depth.
They don't have the depth. No, he's right.
They don't have the depth, but just
the... They have Ovechkin and Panarin on one line.
Yeah. The scoring pressure that team would have and their goaltending... It's out of this world.
Their defense is horrible, though. Like, you've seen the mock-ups. Like, it's just a bunch of guys with Ov as last name, like Provorov.
I just think a team like that, you can't count them out.
I think that'd be a phenomenal bronze medal game. Like, Sweden-Russia would probably be your bronze medal game.
Yeah, but you can't forget Sweden with the ultimate call-up of Toronto Maple Leafs legend Pontus Holmgren on your Olympic roster. When I first saw that, I'm like, how has he done that? I did not think he was Olympic worthy, but come on, he's a Leafs legend. You got to put him there.
As a Sharks fan, him making over William Eklund was disgusting to me.
Holmberg's got the experience.
Is Pontus Holmberg on the NHL roster right now?
He's on the Lightning.
He's on the Lightning?
Yeah.
I don't keep up with Lightning.
He's on their fourth line. He's a penalty kill wizard, man.
Oh, man. Two-way forwards.
Yeah. I mean,
it's the name of the game.
Well, yeah. You can see with a lot of these countries, their lineups, there's a lot of two-way guys. There's, like, especially the bottom lines, it's a lot of guys on NHL rosters who maybe not top six, but they're just two-way. Like, they're going to kill the penalty. They're going to grind it out.
They're that guy that you put on defense during the power play.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of, like, how much influence did Don Cherry have on these guys? Like, how on these, like, roster? Like, these are, like, all, like, hey, these are guys that play the game proper. Two-way forwards.
Both sides of the game.
200-foot hockey.
Exactly. That's how it is, man.
It's not necessarily 200 feet in the Olympics.
But hey, he might be old and senile, but he was right about that.
William Nealon. Oh, man. All right. So let's play. We've gone the Don Cherry. We got to move on. So let's talk a little bit Maple Leafs, even though me and Tanner are Leafs fans. It feels like one week makes a big difference for the Maple Leafs. Yeah, like after
beating
the two worst teams in the Western Conference and
playing the parade,
the inconsistent Edmonton Oilers, it's all of a sudden back to buying for the Maple Leafs. So, like, I still don't think this team is buying.
I don't think so. And if Trey Living buys at the deadline, his head will be on a silver platter at the top of the CN Tower. Because there's no way you can look at how the Leafs have been playing and say, oh, yes, we're going to trade away our draft capital that we already have none of and trade away our prospects that we already have none of. Like, what can the Leafs possibly give up?
Ben Danford, Oshawa Generals legend.
Yeah, so he's kind of the future of our defense.
That guy's horrible. I don't know if you. He's like.
I know. Look, great player when he's got guys around him. He's a big guy. He's a stay-at-home guy. He would have been amazing 15 years ago, but in this game, you need. I think still trading away Rasmus Sandin is the worst mistake the Leafs ever
made. That was a crazy choice.
Because
a worst trade the Leafs ever made. Okay. To go Rasmus Sandin.
No. Maybe not worst trade. In the modern era.
In recent years, the Rasmus Sandin trade is just questionable. I loved
Rasmus Sandin as a player. He was a great puck-moving defenseman. He could generate offensive chances. And the best thing is he knew how to play defense.
I still think the Fraser Mitten first overall pick, that's going to be like...
That's pretty bad, too.
Yeah, I think that's the word. I think that's...
Brendan Carlo has the body of a twig you find in the forest, and you step on it, and it breaks, and you get eaten by a bear. That's Brendan Carlo.
I don't know how to follow that one.
I was looking at you. I was hoping you were going to follow it, but...
That one takes the cake there. I think this team is just missing a lot of... You need guys who really care about winning, and you need guys who are going to move the puck, who are going to play physical and be fast, and it's kind of like the Maple Leafs retirement home right now.
The Leafs are probably one of the oldest, but the heaviest team in the NFL with an average weight of around 230 pounds.
It's
a crazy statistic, but it's true. They're old, they're slow, and they can't move.
It's like they completely flipped the switch on like the 2018-2019 Leafs, where it was young, they were fast, and they could score and
because
skate
all those
circles
guys
around
are
you.
Older now.
Well, yeah, no, but they completely switch it to let's not stay fast. Let's not stay strong. Let's hit everybody. Let's hit everybody. Let's miss our hits. Let's give up wide open shots. Let's let people right into the center ice. Let's
forget how to play defense.
Yeah.
Ryan Reeves, 3 years.
Don't bring that up.
don't bring that up.
He's a wonderful
Sharks. I feel like I could probably do a better job in my NHL 25 franchise mode than Brad True Living is doing right now. I can't even lie.
Brad True Living's made the Maple Leafs an ugly destination for like all teams. It's just, who wants to play in the media? Who wants to play in Toronto media? I think that's a major
I blame
issue.
The suits.
I think everything about Toronto is to blame there. It's the media, it's the fans,
it's just a toxic hockey culture in Toronto now, and it sucks. It sucks, because when I was a kid, the Maple Leafs were horrible, but you still loved going to a game. They were so bad back in like 2012 and 2013, but those were the most fun teams to watch, because you got guys that probably shouldn't be on an NHL roster playing high minutes, like guys like Gabrovsky and like... Joffrey Lupul. What the hell happened to that guy? I have two jerseys of that guy in my room. He was my favorite player when I was a kid. I love Joffrey Lupul.
Joffrey Lupo might be the pull of the day. I can't lie.
He's on Robidoux Island.
even Phil Kessel on those on that early Leafs team.
Right.
That was a, that was a fun guy to watch.
He was always fun to watch.
Captain Dion Phaneuf.
Yep.
Captain Pylon.
Fit right in for this modern Maple Leafs team.
Yeah, no. This this Leafs team, it's sad to say because it was. I live in Toronto, so I've always watched a lot of Leafs games, even though I'm not a Leafs fan. But it's kind of sad to see this era of the Leafs kind of come to an end. You can see the writing on the wall. It's about time to start turning things around and thinking about Nylander might have to be going soon, or Matthews. You might
you
have
just,
to start flipping
these
guys.
But you just signed Nylander to that huge, huge extension. No team's going to want to eat up that contract.
Brad Treliving is simply the worst GM in the NHL.
Honestly, I think there could have been worse picks in that spot, but he was pretty bad.
He's run the Calgary Flames into the ground, and he's currently running the Toronto Maple Leafs into the ground.
The best move that Brad Treliving has made in his last two GM tenures was bringing in Nazem Kadri for Calgary. That's probably the best move he's made. Because he's a great veteran influence on that team, and he's doing the stuff that he should have been doing in Toronto.
And then immediately got rid of Goudreau and Tkachuk.
Yeah.
So
built the Panthers dynasty from Calgary.
Yep, that's true.
Yeah, it's just...
But hey, you got Jonathan Huberdeau.
What a contract from that guy, and he's been one of the worst deals of all time.
Ooh.
Yeah, so...
Bunions.
Yeah, I don't know. It's Treliving. Berube's system just does not work with this team.
I think since Berube had that accident, he just forgot how to coach hockey.
You see this? Do you see this on that guy? He's
yeah, with the,
he's got the
gym
panic
equipment.
Meter.
He's got the panic meter.
What was he doing in the
gym? Somebody hit him. With a
dumbbell.
Somebody grabbed a 40-pound dumbbell and whacked the dude over the head, I swear.
How do you even drop it on your, like, I'm just thinking, like.
Like nothing. What exercise could he possibly have been doing?
This is the, like, I have no idea. Like, because it's a round scar.
Like, maybe, like, you dumbbell press, but, like,
or, like,
flat, and then, like.
He dropped the plate on his head.
Like, it's like somebody hit him with something.
I don't think Craig's doing that heavy a weight too. Like,
Craig's an older guy. I don't know.
Oh man! So kind of like the move off from NHL because you know a lot of hockey gonna come our way in the next.
A lot of hockey. Yep.
The NBA kind of had their own little meltdown. I'd say meltdown because
I'd
what
say so.
What happened yesterday? I feel like every big name from like 2018 got moved yesterday.
Guys, Chris Paul to the Raptors. Guys, playing the parade.
About to get waived. Let's
we're
make
gonna,
that clear. Chris Paul is
win,
about to be
getting
waived.
We're going to win the league with Chris Paul, with 41-year-old Chris Paul. He's going to win his ring with Toronto.
That's kind of like Carey Price to the Sharks. That's the type of move.
Yeah, that was just, we need to get rid of salary cap. He's
that's,
gone. Sorry.
That's so true.
What with the Raptors, I am incredibly disappointed. We traded for Trayce Jackson-Davis from the Golden State Warriors. While we were looking for a big center, we got a 6'9", I think 230-pound center. Not exactly the pickup you're looking for this Raptors.
Could have traded
team.
Back for Chris Boucher.
Honestly, like at this point, anything could have been better. But there were a lot of other teams that made some really big moves. The Jazz. Very big moves, acquiring Jaren Jackson Jr. That was really solid. The Cavs are looking nice after picking up James Harden. I think he's a good replacement for Garland. Garland's a great player, but James Harden's going to be giving you 10 assists a night.
Yeah, but my question is, where do you put do you stick Harden at the shooting guard, or do you move Donovan Mitchell?
No, Harden's a point guard.
Okay, so then you got to move Donovan Mitchell.
The shooting guard?
Yeah,
he'll play two. He's been playing two for a while.
Oh.
He just started watching basketball a week ago?
2 weeks.
2 weeks. Okay, sorry.
Like, like really getting into it. Like,
okay,
really
yeah.
getting into it.
Yeah, no. But James Harden's been playing as a point guard for the last 3 or 4 seasons now. And he's been really good, picking up a lot of assists. And I think he's going to be a great addition to that Cavs offense where they've needed a guy who can make some crazy plays happen when he needs to. And then who else made some big plays?
The Wizards. Is the AD for Luka trade, is that now officially the worst trade in history?
Well, that was officially the worst trade in history the moment it happened. But it honestly might have gotten better because they traded AD and now at least they've gotten more picks out of it.
Yeah, I don't know what the Wizards were. Like, they're 11-win, they're a 12-11-win team.
And well, they have Trae Young.
Yeah.
Trae Young and AD is automatically going to be a crazy duo as long as they can both stay healthy.
If.
Yeah. But they have some, they still have a lot of their really good young players. I believe his name's Keontae George. But they have a lot of good young players where they're going to be doing good to end the season. And then next season, whatever they can do in free agency, I'm sure they're going to be looking really good, probably making a nice little playoff push. Who else? The Lakers didn't really do anything. The Warriors made...
Wait, what do you think about that Warriors trade for Kitsnap Porzingis? I don't Tingus even know how to say Tingus Pingus.
The Warriors needed something to happen. They needed to get rid of Jonathan Kuminga. There's been a lot of talk over the last two seasons about him not being happy with his role with the Warriors. So it's nice to see him finally get to go somewhere. Hopefully he can do something on his new team. But Curry finally, for the first time in his career, gets a really big center, at least since Andrew Bogut. And he can shoot the three really well. He's probably one of the best three-point shooting centers in the league. So it'll be interesting to see maybe a new splash brother for Curry. But Curry, Butler, Draymond, and Kristaps Porzingis is going to be fun to watch.
Should be. Maybe
that would be really. That's I'm giggling here in that lineup. I can't lie to you.
Giggling.
There's.
I don't know, man.
I was
dead silent.
It was funny.
I'm giggling right now.
Okay. I don't know if I want to see another Warriors run.
But I mean, Curry's a fun player to watch, so I'm not upset if they have a good team to surround him with. But I'm still excited about this Mavericks team with Cooper Flagg. He has been lighting it up recently. His only real threat to his rookie of the year is Colin Knurple for the Charlotte Hornets, who's also been lighting up from three. But it seems like he's just running away from this. He's been playing elite defense. He's been averaging 30 over his last couple games. He scored 40 four games ago. Just playing unreal.
Yeah, he has been. But what do you think about Jared McCain to the evil empire in OKC?
To the evil empire?
For nothing.
Yeah, it's
for scraps.
It's just they can't keep getting away with this. Like, Jared McCain, if you asked me 2 years ago, I thought he would have been the future of the 76ers. And now he's joining a superpower.
God, I feel like with his injury and the limited minutes he's been getting this year, it's just like... You got to move him.
I see why the Sixers moved him. He got injured, wasn't playing that well when he came back. He even played some minutes in the G League. But they have Tyrese Maxey, who's incredible. They have VJ Edgecombe, who's been proving himself recently why he was such a high pick. He's been playing elite. So it was a tough situation for Jared McCain to be in. And if I want to be honest, it's a tougher situation now in OKC. He's behind some elite guards. He's going to be coming off the bench. He's going to be fighting for minutes, especially with Alex Caruso, who's one of the best six men in the league. But Shea was recently injured, so it looks like Jared McCain's going to be one of the top guards coming off the bench for OKC for these couple games. But it's a solid pickup. Great scoring off the bench for OKC. He can play all right defense. He can shoot pretty well, which is what OKC have been missing. But it's just a And they didn't give up really anything for him.
You don't really have to give up. Like, if it was 2 years ago, Jared McCain, you have to give up everything. But it's not the same player. It's a player that, unfortunately, isn't who they used to be. And it's just, OKC gets more scary.
The thing is, I wouldn't even say he's not the player he used to be. I think he got injured, and he just never really got a chance again to prove himself. He was playing limited minutes the entire time. And they had other guys to look to. But with this OKC team, I think with so much pressure off him, there's so many other guys on this team that can score. He's going to be, especially right now with Shea out, he's going to be given some okay minutes. He can prove himself again, hopefully put up some good numbers, and either leave in the summer, get traded somewhere else, and OKC gets a big return for him for a little rental for this year. Or he stays in OKC and he proves himself as one of the best bench players in the league.
I think it's best case scenario for him to really sit back there on a good team. He can come prove himself in some limited minutes, gain some confidence on a good team. Once again, it's OKC. this team is, in my opinion, the obvious favorite to win it all. That's it. I don't think that's really this. It's not a hot take. It's probably one of the most coldest takes I'm probably going to say all today.
Yeah.
But I think it's the best way to increase your value, especially as a young player. Get on a good team, play your role properly, and then hope someone in free agency, like one of those teams that love to throw money at like a player, that, and hopefully he can secure a bag that way.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
I would love to see him go to the Timberwolves at some point in his career. I think him next to Ant would be really fun to watch.
That would make my 2K games a lot better because I always pick the Timberwolves. I'm a big Dante DiVincenzo guy.
Well, Timberwolves are going to be interesting now that Mike Conley's gone. They also...
Rob Dillingham's also gone.
Rob Dillingham's... Who's playing point guard for the Timberwolves?
Dante DiVincenzo.
Dante DiVincenzo, and then
that's
they
all
got
you need.
Io DeSunma from the Bulls. It just doesn't... It looked like they were preparing for the Giannis trade. It looked like they were getting ready for it, and it didn't happen. And now they're kind of just stuck in this weird situation where they're just worse. They're simply just worse than before the trade deadline.
Giannis fantasy trade from Shams, like, the last, like, three seasons in a row. It's getting kind of annoying. Like, either you move on from the guy, like, I don't know, like, the stories, like, we keep getting, like, Giannis should have been a Raptor three times in a row now.
Like, I feel like the Bucks have just been saying, ooh, we're going to trade him, we're going to trade him. No, we're not. And then I feel like I saw this, I saw on Instagram that was, I don't know how old this kid is. He's, like, 12. But he has, like, this really, really in-depth knowledge of everything Milwaukee Bucks. So he's trying to put together mock drafts, mock trades for Giannis. And I found a really interesting one where they sent him to Portland to get back the draft capital they lost in the Dame trade so they could prepare for a rebuild, which makes a lot of sense for both teams. You give Portland a guy that can make your team infinitely better, and the Bucks get their draft capital back.
It makes sense for both teams, but the Bucks said that they're going to honor Giannis's trade wishes. And the two teams that he said that he wanted to go to were the Heat and the Timberwolves. So that Trailblazers trade, as much as they would like to do it, seems to be out of the question, at least for now. It depends on if Giannis changes his mind over the offseason. But at least my opinion is they're going to go into the offseason. They're going to try and draft some people, maybe sign a big name in free agency. If Giannis likes what they're doing, likes the direction they're going in, he might stay. If he doesn't, I think he's gone. I think this is genuinely it. This is their last chance to try and keep him. They need to try and do everything they can if they want to because he's an MVP caliber player. He's a top five player in the league year in, year out. But this is it. It's go big or go home this offseason for the Bucks.
Yeah, it's got to be. You really got to move on. Either you build around him or move him on. Like,
yeah.
Either or. Speaking of offseason... MLB offseason's kind of getting along. Now it's gotten to that point where it's slowing down a little bit.
Just a little bit.
Two major moves for the Detroit Tigers. Framber Valdez signs 3 years, $115 million. And Tarik Skubal, he wins his ARB case. I believe it's like $32 million for the next 2 years. Tigers all of a sudden have million-dollar pitchers who can, like, two of the best pitchers in the league. Framber Valdez, I think, is an overpay at $40 million, almost $40 million a year for a guy.
That's a
who
lot of money.
I
do like Framber Valdez. His attitude is a bit of a problem. But he's a great pitcher, and he's someone that you're not going to complain if he's on your team, right? So I don't hate the move for the Tigers. It just makes their rotation all the more scarier.
They're going to be a tough team to face. That's just how it's going to be next year.
On the defensive side of the ball. I don't know about offense.
We're going to see how that goes.
They got some solid pieces. They play in a weaker division. Like, it's not going to be the Twins. I know that for a fact.
Oh, that's for sure.
I know that for a fact. It's not going to be the Twins.
They're a bad baseball club.
Cleveland always finds
a way to have a good season. Meanwhile, they have like four big name pieces.
And then we steal their big name pieces.
And then we steal
them. Yeah, they're such a hard team to gauge.
Steven Kwan to the Jays. It's coming soon.
Do we need to see one? I don't know.
No, but we're just going to take players from Cleveland. We're going to
jump on the
bandwagon of just taking people from Cleveland.
Oh, man. And then who else in that division? That's Cleveland, Detroit.
Royals.
I think the Royals.
The Royals could have a good year.
I think the Royals.
Bobby Witt Jr. could have another MVP caliber season like he's been having. So
I think it might be the Royals' year to win that division. I think they They should win that division.
I just don't like the Royals in the playoffs. Flashbacks from 2015.
It's been 10 years, man. There's another evil empire in baseball.
It's the Kansas City Royals.
IKF, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, also went to the Red Sox.
The name should not be brought up.
Isaiah Kiner-Falefa should be banished to another baseball league.
He should get first.
He
time
shouldn't
to play
be
the
allowed
Sox.
In the
IKF
MLB anymore.
To the KBO.
Yep, put him in the second. Put him in Mexico. Like what they did with Trevor Bauer.
I want you, Savage, to beam him. First time we see IKF, just beam
right
him
in the face.
Just
boom.
Hey, maybe he'll slide home this time. Or not slide home. Maybe run through home next.
Maybe
time.
Maybe he'll run
do
a little bit faster.
Maybe yeah, run through. Why feet first?
You could be like little league, 8 years old. Your coach tells you feet first is not the quickest way to get to the base.
Not even sliding. That's in that situation, you're basically running
yeah,
through.
Either run through or dive head first. It's the World Series. What are you scared about?
World Series. Right. World
put
series
it on the line.
World Series. Yeah. It wasn't game one. It was a crucial game. Like, Jays would have won the world entire
That's
World
right.
Series.
That's right. I know, Nate, you played some high-level baseball. I played House League baseball. My coaches would tell me, put it on the line for the game. Like,
yeah.
Like, we had no shame. I was diving in head first to people at 8 years old. Like, it was not yeah. like... What are we doing? I was sitting there watching that game. I think it was game 6 or 7 that happened. Ooh. I think it was game 6 cuz it wasn't ball on the wall. Ball on the wall was game 7.
Ball on the wall was 6.
Okay, so then I have the two flipped. Yeah. Game 7, I was at a wedding. We were watching that game on the TV. We're looking at him like, "What are you doing? What are you doing? What are you doing?"
Just overall, the Blue Jays base running that series, well, even the entire playoffs, was just atrocious. Just rookie mistakes all around every game.
Bring back Dalton Pompey, greatest base runner in Blue Jays history.
Best Toronto cop at all time. Yeah, I saw that. I saw the IKF clip, and then you see his lead, and then all of a sudden I can hear my coaches up past just screaming. I can hear it. It was like a PTSD reaction. I felt it. I'm like, dude, you're going to make the whole team run next practice. But there's no next practice.
There is no next practice.
Well, yeah. That's why he left the Jays, because he didn't want to have to run next season.
John Schneider. You guys, no balls at practice. Oh, no. That would be a scary thought. But the MLB should be. Actually, I'm lying. The Dodgers. Do we think the Dodgers are going to win it all?
I think Cody Ponce is going to strike out everybody in the league.
It's just like,
you can't argue with those numbers in the KBO.
With what the Dodgers have done the last two seasons, and then adding Kyle Tucker on top of that.
And Edwin Diaz.
That's just like a kick in the face to absolutely everybody.
Yeah, how do you look at that team and go, they've won 2 years in a row, how do they not do it again?
I think what people forget is that Dodgers team, they're susceptible. Like,
everybody gets injured. Yeah. That's the only way.
Their bullpen was bad last season, and they weren't a... They play in the wild card. I think people tend to forget that. They weren't
against the Cincinnati Reds.
They weren't a 115 win team that we all thought they were going to be. They were like a 100 win,
but
3 seed.
I think they had the same record as the Jays, if not one win less.
I think it was one win less because
they were 92 and 60 something. Yeah.
But you don't have to be the number one team in the league. You just have to make the playoffs.
Yeah, that's right.
But they played in a close, like, the Phillies couldn't beat them in that series.
That's right.
I forgot the pitcher's name, but he had a total aneurysm on the mound and rips it at the backstop. And I think that series would have been close. Like, the Phillies couldn't hit for nothing that entire series. I saw a stat today, they hit 200 against the Jays, and they won the series.
Yeah.
It was just, they can hit in crucial situations, but that team last year was beatable, and I think everyone's getting a year older. Freddie Freeman's older now. Mookie Betts had a downturn last season. I don't know if he can come back, like George Springer-esque. Teoscar Hernandez can't be good forever, hopefully. Kyle Tucker, whatever. You know, and then they'll have the best player.
My question is, where do you put him?
Or?
Where do you put Kyle Tucker? You have a good outfield.
You put him anywhere.
Yeah.
You have a good outfield.
Not really. Like, Kike Hernandez can go sit on the bench, buddy. Like,
Kike Hernandez is a clutch bat. He's not bad.
I don't think I'm betting Kike Hernandez.
Yeah, I'm still taking Kyle Tucker. Like,
okay, maybe, but then how about like your defensive weapons like Tommy Edman and Alex Call?
Death beam pointed at the earth. You're taking Kike Hernandez over Kyle Tucker?
I'm taking Tommy Edman.
Edman
is an underrated player on that team. He deserves all the money in the world.
Tommy Edman can play second.
But also,
he's a better outfielder. He's a better outfielder than a second.
Kike Hernandez as a pinch hitter for the Dodgers That's a great situation for them to be in.
Yeah, but are you paying him that much to be a pinch hitter?
Yes. It's the Dodgers. They already have unlimited money.
They don't
money.
Care about
they,
the money.
That's true, yeah. They don't care.
But KK Hernandez could be, like, that's the thing with the Dodgers. These playable that they have on the bench could be, like, stars on any other team.
Yeah, but you look at guys like KK Hernandez, the guy
KK Hernandez life. Could be a good player on, like, a bad, like not.
He'd
I'm
be
not
a great player on the Twins.
Yes. Yes. He'd be a great player on the Twins or the Guardians or, like, one of those, like, the Marlins. He'd be a phenomenal player on the Marlins.
Yeah, but I'd rather make, you know, tens of millions of dollars sitting on the bench watching Shohei go yabo every game. Like, that seems like the best, like,
I don't
possible.
Know. My love for the game is clouding my judgment.
Yeah. Well, also, like, Kyle Tucker, I can't even really hate his decision too much. Like, I know he reportedly wanted to come to Toronto, but the Dodgers gave him so much money.
Give me $60 million and I'll fly down there, too. Come on, Dodgers.
Plus, you get to live in L.A. Like,
I don't know if that's the biggest perk anymore. Like,
yeah,
you know,
maybe a couple years ago.
But, like, you can live, like, just outside the city. It's great weather all year round. Like, great food.
Hey, if you're me and I'm a baseball player, I'm doing everything in my power to go to the Yankees.
What?
I love New York.
Huh?
I love New York. Not their baseball team. The city of New York.
You're just
I would rather just play for the Mets.
Yeah, but that's Queens. New York is, like, the Yankees are Manhattan, dude.
you can live anywhere in New York.
That's true.
Like, you don't have to live in Queens.
I guess.
Just have to play in Queens.
You want to live in New York? You want to play for the Yankees?
I love New York.
No matter.
You are no longer welcome on this podcast.
Frankie's just made his last appearance on Golden Bowl, everyone.
I love New York. Not their sports teams.
But I love Boston. I don't like Boston sports teams, but the city itself.
Thank you.
I love.
Same with me in New York, but he's allowed.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you said you want to play for the Yankees. Yeah.
No, like, I'm saying if I was a baseball player.
Oh, man.
Like, if I was a baseball player.
All right. I think we got one more thing to really talk about. It's the elephant in the room, really. The biggest sporting event. No, not even actually not the biggest sporting event of the year, but this biggest.
The Super Bowl.
Yep. A return of the clocks back. 10 years, it feels like. Probably more, but probably 12 years since Seahawks been in the playoffs, since the Super Bowl, really. Patriots, Seahawks.
It's been a while.
It's been a long
2014?
Time.
2014?
Hey, yeah. Look, I can't talk.
Yeah.
I can't talk.
Run the ball.
Is that... And I feel like you're going to run the ball and then Kenneth Walker fumbles at the 1 yard line.
If he fumbles the ball, fair play. You know what? We did it different this time. It doesn't work. Okay, whatever. But Emmanuel being injured is possibly the worst news I could have gotten in months.
Like, I don't think
I feel like with these two teams, it's unstoppable force meets immovable object because
it's very stoppable force.
It's very stoppable force
because both teams have their insane strengths, but they also have their insane flaws.
I think
you look at the quarterback battle. There's an obviously better quarterback on the AFC side of the ball.
You mean Sam Darnold?
You mean? Are we serious right now?
Drake May has been horrible all playoffs.
We're thinking Sam Darnold, when the lights shine too bright.
For
Sam
an alleged MVP candidate in Drake May, he has had a horrible playoff
run. You think he's worse than Sam Darnold?
Right now, if we're talking right now, give me Sam Darnold over Drake May. Drake May almost lost to Jared Stidham.
First of all, give me Josh Allen over both of them. And the
Josh turned the ball over four times.
The Broncos defense is elite and it's been elite. Yes. That's something. That's why he struggled so much. Not because Jared Stidham is a better quarterback.
The Broncos defense it's not like the Texans defense. I mean, I'll be honest with you.
I think it's better than Texans.
The Broncos defense is
it's
better.
It's really good defenses,
but Broncos was better.
It's really good, but your supposed 100%. MVP candidate can't score. Like, if Jared Stidham himself all over the field and turn the ball over at the 10-yard line, because, like,
poor guy, cut him some slack. It was his first NFL start.
He's an NFL caliber quarterback.
It's like his second NFL start. Yeah. He played a game for the Raiders in like 2020.
He was Tom Brady's protege. I would expect him to put up more than like two drives, and he was killing me the entire game.
I'd cut Mr. Stidham some slack.
I cut Mr. Stidham no slack. I got through a duck to end the game.
Not his brightest moment at the end of the game.
That's like his only moment.
Yeah, okay, but I still think you can't blame him there. It's his first game to start in years. He's going up against the Patriots, who are an incredible team. They're going to the Super Bowl for a reason. He's not being put into an easy situation here.
I mean, like, come on, man. You bro, like, I'm you obviously know where I'm coming from here, yeah. But like, That's such a waste of a defense. But if the Seahawks played the Broncos in the Super Bowl, that would be the most boring thing to watch. Like,
it would have been
0-0.
Defense versus defense.
Yeah, the final score would have been like 6-3.
Yeah. Like, the thing with the Seahawks and Patriots, I think the Seahawks offense is good. I don't think the Patriots have a corner. I don't think the Patriots have a receiver that can beat the
You
Seattle
have no
defense.
Trust in Stephon Diggs?
No.
How are you feeling about Stephon Diggs as a Bills fan?
I think it was the right move to make to get rid of him because in those later seasons,
it was rough.
It was rough because he would get mad every time Josh would throw the ball to somebody else. He'd bitch and complain to the coaches that he wasn't getting the ball.
AJ Brown.
Even though he was getting the ball most of the time. You look at the targets in 2023, 2022. It was all Stephon Diggs. Like, none of our other receivers were getting the ball. Maybe that's why we have no receivers now. Because nobody wants to play in Buffalo. Because they were just going to throw the ball to Stephon Diggs.
I mean, the Bills also can't draft, man. That's why they also...
That's also a problem. That's also a problem. I'm not denying the fact that drafting Keon Coleman over Xavier Worthy was a mistake.
Also, Terry Pegula is your owner, so...
You guys used to have great draft, like, great picks. Like...
Our best two picks were Ed Oliver and Josh Allen.
Yeah, but, like, now it's, like... hindsight is 20/20, but even at the time, it's still, like... What?
Yeah.
Trade down with your biggest adversary. Let them pick the next Tyreek Hill. Yeah. And then you take...
Okay, I don't think Xavier Worthy's okay. That.
Yeah, at the time. He's
pretty fast. That's about it. He's got buttery fingers.
I think he has some potential to be a really good receiver, but Tyreek Hill is definitely a little bit of a stretch.
That was his. I remember that. I was on the night. I'm like, oh, God, they gave the Chiefs Tyreek Hill again. That was the consensus, but he's not that good. And... Key Chiefs receivers can't stay out of trouble. But to talk about the Super Bowl, really, like, it's going to be, like, can Drake May beat a good defense? He's beaten three good defenses, maybe not on the back of himself, but it's a Seahawks defense that's been...
It's the Seahawks game to lose.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of this is going to be, can JSN make those big plays that he's been able to make these playoffs?
I don't think this has to be a JSN game. The Seahawks, I think, have enough weapons... Where Sam, if it's going to be Sam Darnold. Like, it's all going to come down to Sam
Will
Darnold.
Will the lights shine too bright I know for Mr. Darnold?
I know he's ginger. He, like, can't get burned
by
these lights.
They've never shined brighter than this moment here.
Exactly. Like, you have the unlimited amount of talent. Like, you have three receivers that can be a wide receiver one in Buffalo. You have JSN, you have Cooper Kupp, and you have Rashid Shaheed. Like, all three of those guys can be ones in Buffalo. All three of those guys can be ones in a few other places, too. But
it's not just Buffalo with receiver problems, guys. It's a lot of Buffalo. But Sam Darnold is giving me Oklahoma State against TCU down by like 48 and the quarterback's hands are shaking violently. That's the vibe I'm getting from
Sam
Darnold.
Stadium pressure
is
maxed out right now.
Yeah. Stadium pressure and Mo Bamba is playing throughout the stadium.
I don't know. Like, with Sam Darnold, it's can he perform? If he does, if he's average, it's lights out for the Patriots.
Yeah, he doesn't even have to be elite in this game. He just has to be good.
Yeah, he doesn't have to be good. He has to be average. Like, you have enough weapons. You have the running game. You have the defense. If you can score, I think, 24 points, lights out for the Patriots.
We got score predictions? Score predictions before we wrap it up?
Score predictions?
I'm going to go with Patrick Surtain made a score prediction. I'm going to go right off that. 35-7.
35-7.
Seahawks. I think the Patriots are going to get after
slaughtered. I am a Seahawks fan. That is absurd.
I think the Pats are going to get slaughtered.
No. The Pats are going to be putting up, I'm thinking, at least 17 points.
They haven't put up 17 points. They actually have. But
I'm thinking 27-24 in favor of the Seahawks. Close game.
Close.
I'm thinking close game.
I can see that.
Playoffs have all been, most of the playoff games have been close all year. So yep. I'm thinking
except for the Seahawks game against the 49ers.
Yeah, except for that game. I'm thinking it's going to be remnants of Packers Bears into the Super Bowl.
Tanner, what do you think? You're the Seahawks. You're the bias here.
I honestly have to agree with Frankie there. I think it's going to be a close game. I think it's really going to come down to the Seahawks defense, how much and how Drake May performs against them. I think he's going to do well. Emanwori being hurt is a big blow to the Seahawks defense. And obviously seeing how they deal with that is going to be interesting. But we'll see if Drake May is an MVP caliber quarterback here.
I don't think Drake May is an MVP. I think it's
Stafford, I don't think he is, but he's right behind him.
He should be. But he has to prove himself. He has to show that regular season performance, regular season Drake May. If he shows up, we're going to have a close game.
That's right.
But he hasn't shown up all during the playoffs. But, you know, it's going to be a big week of sports. Olympics, Super Bowl. I'd like to thank Frankie. I'd like to thank Tanner once again. You guys, once again, incredible analysis on everything sports here. And I think that'll do it for the third episode of 2026 for Golden Bold. I'm Nathan Pagliaroli, and I'm signing out. Yes. All right. No, is that on? We're good. We can edit that out anyways.